know, this is the third year in a row that we have flirted with a government shutdown in Alaska.
It's the last day of the legislative session, and there's still no agreement on a budget. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, May 17th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, the Justice Department has appointed a special counsel to investigate possible Russian interference in the presidential election.
It might be better if they go through with this process and find out the result.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The legislature is ending its session today with no state budget and no agreement on a plan to balance the budget in the future. House Speaker Bryce Edgman says he's disappointed the legislature couldn't finish its work on time for the third straight year. He says government layoff notices will go out at the beginning of June, just in case there's no budget on July 1st.
I don't think anybody wants to see pink slips go out, but I think we're definitely in that territory now. And clearly, you know, this is the third year in a row that we have flirted with a government shutdown in Alaska, and it's very unfortunate. But then again, the challenges that are before the state are historic in nature and are very difficult.
Lawmakers expect Governor Bill Walker to call a special session to finish the budget and a long-term plan to balance how much the state government spends with how much it raises in taxes, fees, and oil royalties. Both the House and Senate have passed legislation to spend permanent fund earnings to pay for state government and to limit permanent fund dividends. The House also passed bills to bring back an income tax and to raise oil and gas taxes to close the budget deficit. But Senate majority members say leaving a deficit will create pressure to keep spending down. They also express hope that spending cuts combined with increased oil production will close the gap. The two chambers haven't made progress in recent weeks to bridge the differences between their plans. Instead, they focused on other bills. The two bodies did agree on a bill paving the way for transportation networks like Uber and Lyft to enter Alaska. Shortly before the Senate passed the bill, sponsor Mia Costello said it's needed.
60,000 Alaskans have tried to access a ride via a rideshare app simply because I believe there's an expectation out there that we have it here in Alaska. And we don't. But today, Mr. President, with the passage of this bill, we will.
The House could pass one more major bill this evening, a wide-ranging criminal justice bill prompted by the public outcry over last year's criminal justice overhaul. The Alaska legislature approved 101 of Governor Walker's appointments yesterday and voted down one. The only rejection was of Fairbanks resident Drew Phoenix. He served as a member of the State Commission for Human Rights since February. He's also transgender. His appointment was defeated 35-24. Phoenix says the vote is disheartening.
Sadly, I think today it's obvious that I was discriminated against because I'm a transgender man based on that and not on my qualifications.
Phoenix thanked Walker for having faith in his qualifications and said the vote doesn't reflect on most Alaskans. North Pole Republican Senator John Coghill voted against Phoenix. He cited Phoenix's history as an advocate. Phoenix has worked for the ACLU of Alaska Foundation and the LGBT advocacy organization Identity Alaska.
When you're an advocate, you're pushing for a policy call. But when you're within that commission, you're looking out for people more even-handedly. And I couldn't get the comfort level that that would be the case in the Human Rights Commission with Drew.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz supported Phoenix.
To see people vote down a very strong candidate for such thinly veiled reasons today was nothing short of just discrimination.
Conservatives expressed concern about the commission in November when it raised the possibility of interpreting the state ban on sex discrimination to include gender identity and sexual orientation. Phoenix says the vote shows there's a lot of work left to do. He says individuals change their ideas about transgender people when they get to know him.
Transgender ceases to be a word and becomes an individual who has values like they have. I'm a religious person. I'm Christian like they're Christian. You know, I love my family. I believe in working hard and contributing to the community. And we all share those same values. And that's how we learn to connect and learn to relate.
All but two Republicans voted against Phoenix. All but three Democrats voted for him. The two House independents also voted for him. Alaska Congressman Don Young says it's fine with him that the Justice Department has appointed a special counsel to oversee its investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election.
The Justice Department, they can do what they want to. In fact, it might be better if they go through with this process and find out the results. I don't think there's anything been wrong done, and I've said that all along. This is all media hype.
Young was leaving his office for the day and didn't specify what he meant.
The media hype, you know what I'm talking about. The constant Washington Post, every day something's in there doesn't mean a damn thing. So, all right, we've got to go. Come on, honey.
Young spokesman Matt Shukarow says the congressman doesn't dispute the report of the intelligence agencies in January that said Russia had a campaign to influence the U.S. election. Shukarow says the congressman believes the media are hyping the details that have emerged in recent days. An Aleutian volcano erupted Tuesday night and spewed ash for more than an hour. The Alaska Volcano Observatory says Bogoslav Volcano erupted at 10:32 p.m. and continued for 73 minutes. A pilot reported the eruption produced an ash cloud that reached 34,000 feet, and the observatory issued a warning for aircraft. Wind pushed the cloud southwest. Ash from southwest Alaska volcanoes is a threat to airliners operating between North America and Asia when a cloud rises above 20,000 feet. It can harm and stop jet engines. Bogoslav has been erupting periodically since mid-December. The observatory says additional explosions producing high-altitude ash could occur at any time. The volcano is 850 miles southwest of Anchorage in the Aleutian Islands. A sinkhole has opened up on Fort Wainwright in Fairbanks. Public Affairs Officer Mel Slater says the 3-foot diameter void discovered Monday near a housing unit is suspected to be the result of thawing permafrost.
When they inspected the sinkhole, what they found was some wood debris, some metal debris, and a partially crushed metal drum.
Slater says the sinkhole has been cordoned off, and post officials are cautioning people to stay away from it until the revealed materials can be checked for toxins. Slater says the area has no known history of waste disposal.
Current word that we have right now, there was no evidence of dumping or anything like that.
Fort Wainwright is already home to 6 sites managed under the Environmental Protection Agency's Superfund Contaminated Sites Program. The most recently identified site is the Taku Gardens housing complex. In 2003, contaminants were unearthed at the 54-acre former Army communication site. It resulted in remediation that addressed soils contaminated with PCBs, petroleum, pesticides, and other chemicals, as well as munitions. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, one Anchorage student has been giving weather forecasts for most of his scholastic life.
For those who don't like the heat, it's going to be a relief with temperatures being only into the 50s today.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of operations in Alaska. At Alaska Pacific University, students are surrounded by beauty, distinguished faculty, and independent-minded creative students pursuing higher education. AlaskaPacific.edu, moving life forward with APU. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
A bit of last-minute school funding for the Matanuska-Susitna Borough did not survive the mayor's veto pen. The Borough Assembly had earlier voted to take about $1.6 million from a school selection fund and add it to the 2018 school district operating budget. The money would have been about 3% of the school district's overall budget. One assembly member likened using the reserve fund to raiding one of the borough's last cookie jars. At last night's assembly meeting, Mayor Vern Halter agreed by vetoing the funds. Halter cites fiscal uncertainty across the state as one of his reasons for his decision.
I want to keep our reserves. We have a large reserve, then we have this reserve. I want to keep them in case there's money flow changes in the borough that we have to face ourselves.
Assemblymember Dan Mayfield first proposed using the school selection fund money and says the borough is not doing everything it can to fund education.
By not funding education to the best level that we can, we're forcing the loss of jobs and we're forcing the higher class sizes when we have an avenue to do something different.
In the end, Mayfield and three other assembly members did not have the necessary 5 votes to override the mayor's veto. Mat-Su District school funding for 2018 will remain the same as this year at just over $55 million. The Alaska State Troopers have a new boss. Longtime trooper Hans Brinke is now Colonel Brinke, the head of an organization he joined 26 years ago as a recruit. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove caught up with Brinke on his first day.
It's actually going pretty good. Drinking from a fire hose, swallowing what I can, and trying to hope for the best.
Colonel Hans Brinke has worked as a canine cop and drug investigator before moving up the ranks to captain and, most recently, a detachment commander in Palmer. Brinke says he already knows there are at least 3 things that troopers must focus on as an organization. Those are the state's opioid epidemic, along with its many public safety impacts, as well as an uptick in traffic fatalities in Alaska, and recruiting and retaining more troopers. Like many state agencies, the Department of Public Safety is coping with the state's fiscal crisis.
With less troopers on the street, we do have vacancies that are out there, so we have to be more creative and stretch our resources out a little bit further. Asking the guys to do more with less is something that you're going to hear.
In some cases, Brinke says, violent crimes like assault and murder may need to be prioritized ahead of property crimes such as burglary. He says both types of crime can be common symptoms of opioid dealing and addiction. The new colonel says getting to the root of the problem and combating illegal opioids is a top priority for the troopers.
Right now, I'm going to tell you that the opioid epidemic is huge, and that's not just the use of heroin, but it's also prescription pills that have those narcotics in them, too. So those are right now the top of my list.
Brinke says that includes public partnerships with groups outside of law enforcement, as well as training troopers to treat overdoses in the field. Brinke takes over for Colonel Jim Cockrell, a former Wildlife Trooper Division Director who has now retired from the troopers 3 times. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Casey Grove.
The Alaska Department of Transportation's summer road construction season has begun, with major projects in Fairbanks and on both the Richardson and Parks highways. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, crews are hustling to get as much work done as possible during the short construction season.
Breakup is done and greenup is well underway, and so is the summer road construction season.
It is the beginning of construction season for us. This is definitely when you see people and projects really kicking off. So you'll notice just about every road in Alaska, you'll see some kind of a construction project.
Transportation Department spokeswoman Meadow Bailey says most of the work motorists will encounter in northern Alaska this summer are maintenance projects, like the one that got underway Monday on a stretch of the Richardson Highway from Birch Lake to Delta Junction, beginning in an area just east of Tenderfoot Hill, where permafrost buckles have turned the roadway into a sort of roller coaster.
For the next 10 days or so, you'll see our crews out there, and they will be working on resurfacing the road in areas where the pavement is starting to disintegrate.
Bailey says that and other preventive maintenance projects are intended to fix such immediate problems as potholes and frost heaves and to make the road surface last longer.
The goal there is really to extend the life of the surface so that we don't have to go in and do a costly reconstruction. We're just extending the life by doing these patching jobs.
Bailey says the department will do only a few road construction projects this summer in northern Alaska, like the work on Noble Street in Fairbanks and on a stretch of the Parks Highway north of Denali Village, where the department will resume work begun last year on a wall to block rock slides from reaching the roadway.
Last year we went in and we stabilized the slope. We removed any of the rocks that weren't very stable, and this year we'll go in and repave that area.
Bailey says the department has a few more road maintenance and construction projects farther south on the parks, around Wasilla, and on the Glen and Seward highways around Anchorage and on the Kenai. On the Richardson Highway, there'll be work underway around Banner Creek near the Fairbanks North Star Borough boundary, also around the junction of the Toke Cutoff and at the other end where it intersects with the Alaska Highway, and near the junction of the Rich and Edgerton highways about 80 miles north of Valdez. Bailey says motorists should approach the construction zones slowly and proceed carefully.
Slow down. Make sure that you're not talking on your cell phone and that you're focused on the road. Follow the signs and pay attention to the workers and the equipment.
Bailey says motorists can check a couple of websites to find out where road work is underway. They are 511.alaska.gov and alaskanavigator.org. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Every year on Kodiak Island, the common cold, known locally as the Kodiak crud, spreads among city residents. But imagine if a more serious disease infected the population, like Ebola, which spreads through bodily fluids. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services is running a simulation this week to see how a rural community in Alaska would handle an outbreak of Ebola. And it chose Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center to conduct the exercise. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has the story.
A nurse pulls on a third pair of gloves. She's wearing a hood with a rectangular window to see through, and is covering a plastic hood that comes with her bodysuit. She wears a respirator on her back that clears the air of germs, but that's the only place fresh air will enter. Beneath the smock of blue plastic, she's secured the edges of her gloves to her suit using duct tape. There are also shoe coverings over her shoe coverings. Around her, hospital employees prep the emergency department for the patient's arrival. Someone sets up a curtain over an interior door and installs zippers so that people can pass through. They also spread a plastic sheet over the carpet at the main entrance. Emergency program manager with the state's Division of Public Health, Charles Pelton, says they are preparing for what's called a wet patient.
She's close to having vomiting and other things, and by designating her the wet patient, you probably may be aware that she will become a wet patient shortly.
The patient's role involves simulating whatever symptoms go along with her condition. When the ambulance pulls up, the patient climbs out wearing sweatpants and a tank top with red splotches covering her face, neck, and arms. There are dark circles under her eyes. Hospital employees escort her to a room where her two plastic-wrapped nurses are ready to examine her. The patient tells them she went on a mission trip to Africa about a week ago.
Does anything hurt right now?
My whole body hurts.
On a scale from 0 to 10.
During a break in her performance, Felicia Roberts goes over the contents of a few small bags she holds in her lap.
So this is essentially like vomit with blood in it.
What is it actually?
brownie batter with food dye.
Nice.
And then this is like watered down chili.
Roberts' character later passes away as a test to see how staff handles the remains. In a room downstairs, the incident command team keeps twists like these running according to plan. Pelton sits with his computer and cell phone in front of him, ready for the next email or text that comes through. He says the state of Alaska received a grant to train and prepare for infectious diseases like Ebola, which he says would be insidious in the case of an isolated community like Kodiak.
Because of the fact we've learned so much, we're able to take care of those things, we're able to practice those lessons that we've learned, so that in communities like this and in Alaska overall, we'll be able to take care of events like this when they come up.
He says after they complete the entire simulation, they'll decide on what they did right and wrong and how they can improve, and they'll share those results with hospitals in the rest of the state. The simulation in Kodiak continues over 2 days with two separate patients, one who will be transported to Anchorage. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
A University of Alaska Anchorage provost will serve as interim UAA chancellor while a search is conducted to replace outgoing chancellor Tom Case. Anchorage campus provost Samuel Gingrich will fill in after Chancellor Case retires June 30th. UA President Jim Johnson shared the news Monday during a special regents meeting.
Given the continuity of leadership that Provost Gingrich provides, my plan is to commence the search in the fall.
A similar nationwide search at the University of Alaska Fairbanks yielded four chancellor finalists last month. They are U.S. Global Change Research Program Director J. Michael Cooperberg, Scripps Institute of Oceanography Director Emeritus Tony Haymet, former Fort Hays State University President Myrta Martin, and current University of Alaska Vice President for Academic Affairs and Research Dan White. President Johnson hopes to have a final decision by May 23rd. The UAF chancellor's post has been filled on an interim basis since the 2015 retirement of Brian Rogers. President Johnson says the plan is to have a permanent chancellor in place by July 1st. A Juneau man who worked his way out from behind prison bars earned a degree from the University of Alaska Southeast this month. KTOO's Quentin Chandler spoke to Marcos Galindo about his past mistakes and the future he's working toward.
This month, 30-year-old Marcos Galindo graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree in social science with a concentration in political science. Now he's working on a Master's of Public Administration and wants a PhD in Chicano Studies, a choice weighted by his early life on the streets and in the prisons of California.
Especially in the gang culture of California, it's a lot of false propaganda about what it means to be one's brother's keeper, what it means to be part of La Raza, or part of being Mexicano and being Chicano.
He says feeding on that propaganda landed him in prison.
I want to know the historical accuracy of what it means to be my brother's keeper, and I want to know a true meaning of what it is to be Chicano.
Galindo's story starts in California. He says he came from a broken home, and like a lot of kids from broken homes, he started partying and acting wild in his teens. He got arrested for fighting and was sent to juvenile hall, where he says race determined everything.
Since I'm Mexican, and you could see it by just looking at my features, I was accepted in by the Mexicans really quick. And you know, you become a product of your environment. So I lost that free love, party life, party, everybody happy. And I became a cholo, I became a gangster, you know, and I got clicked up as soon as I got out and got jumped in about 13.
He used his new status to vent the anger he was holding in.
I loved it. I love the fast lifestyle. I love people being afraid of me. I love the fast money. I love packing a gun. I loved all of that.
But, of course, that put him in prison, where he ended up doing someone a favor.
When I was doing my time there, fighting my case, I ended up getting celled up with a big homie, which is an individual that's clicked up with OC, with organized crime, which is no longer street gangs. This is prison gangs. This is big deal stuff.
He did the favor, and his time increased from 18 months to 5 years. He was released at 25, but ended up going back pretty quick.
So I got thrown up in the hole, and then I seen the individuals who were running the show, right, these big-time players and the OC of the organization I was part of, and they were all heroin addicts. They were all old 60-year-old, you know, 50-year-old heroin addicts.
Then Galindo ran into his brother, who is serving life in prison for murder.
And he's like, I'm never going to be able to hold my daughter again. I'm never going to be able to hold a woman again. I'm never going to be able to enjoy, you know, an In-N-Out cheeseburger. I'm never going to, all these things, because I killed for a corner of a street that's not mine. It's a corner of a street that we've been fighting over for, you know, since the 40s. And none of us own it.
That was it. Galindo's mom invited him to come to Juneau. He came. He landed two jobs and started making good money. Then someone called him a racial slur. He beat the guy up and was arrested. When his criminal history came up, he says they threw the book at him.
Kudos to Juneau for that, you know, trying to nip this stuff in the butt.
Galindo was sent to Lemon Creek Correctional, where he joined the Flying University, a program that brought University of Alaska Southeast courses in philosophy and literature to prison inmates. UAS students on the outside also came. The plan was for the students and the inmates to learn from each other. It evolved into a prison reentry program. Galindo says he loved it. He also learned that he was a father while in prison, and he rekindled his faith. Those three things, school, faith, and family, pushed him to change a second time.
I was like, this is it. There's no more chance. If I ever go back to prison, it's going to be must have been my destiny, because I don't want this lifestyle, and I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure I never, ever, ever go back. And so I started school, and I graduated with my bachelor's in 3 years.
Galindo is one of three Flying University alums who graduated this month. Another former inmate, Nathan Block, earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in English with an emphasis in literature and minors in philosophy and Tlingit. Thomas Spitzfaden, a regular student who took classes in Lemon Creek with the inmates, graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Social Science. Galindo says education is a powerful weapon and a cure for many of society's problems, including the high rate of former felons who go back to prison. In Juneau, I'm Quentin Chandler.
You can watch a documentary about the Flying University at 360north.org. For many high schoolers, the first official thing they hear at school every day is the Pledge of Allegiance and announcements. But as Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, students at Anchorage's Bartlett High School get something more.
And good morning, Bartlett Bears. Welcome to Wednesday, May 17th, graduation day. I'm meteorologist Jack Pellerin. And well, wind again, one of our big topics.
14-year-old Jack Pellerin is one of the first voices the students at Bartlett hear in the morning. A 5'1" freshman, each day at 7:30, Pellerin serves as the school's resident weather reporter, his voice traveling through the halls, letting all the students know what they should be expecting in the skies over Anchorage.
It's nice to be able to talk about, like, even warning people about storms, about, oh, big storm coming, like, and stuff.
Pellerin took to meteorology early in life and says he's been doing weather reports since he was in elementary school, taking a year-long hiatus in the sixth grade.
Weather or like wind specifically, I really like, and it's been before I started reporting that I've liked this, so it's been a while.
After hearing about Pellerin's knack for meteorology, a Bartlett staff member recommended that he do a morning weather show every day at the high school.
Cooler than yesterday, so for those who don't like the heat, it's going to be a relief with temperatures being only into the 50s today.
And Pellerin says he thinks having a daily weather report breaks up the monotony of typical morning announcements.
I mean, it feels like it's just such a rare thing. I mean, it's really kind of very unique to just have a weather reporter here. Usually, the most common thing is just to have a morning announcements thing like, okay, cross-country running today or whatever.
Pellerin is the only weather reporter at the school, and he says when he's not around, things aren't the same in the mornings.
One time I wasn't here, Madison Zhang just said, oh, weather report, just look out your window. Because, I mean, there really isn't really weather when the weatherman's not here.
Pellerin's pretty early in his high school career, but he still foresees continuing his morning gig until he graduates, improving along the way.
The future, I'm thinking, is that I'm going to continue this 7:30 broadcast and continue to do my thing. And, like, my routine might be a little different where I, like, write at home and then, or, like, write more at home and do less here. But, like, basically I'm just going to continue, I hope.
Pellerin has dreams of one day working live with green screen maps as a professional meteorologist. For now, students at Bartlett will get to hear about the weather changes, followed by Pellerin's signature sign-off.
And remember, the sun always shines at Bartlett High. Go Bears!
Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Quentin Chandler in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Casey Grove in Anchorage, and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Ann Hellman. Have a lovely evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.